From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. More Idaho Matters right now. As Hollywood writers and actors remain on strike, the movie Barbie is breaking records around the world at the box office. So joining us with the very latest on Hollywood and to help us figure out what to watch this weekend is our very own resident movie critic and Morning Edition host, George Prentice. Hi, George.
Hi, Gemma.
Okay. Can we talk a little bit about the actor strike? You and I have not been able to discuss this yet, and I'm just curious about what appears to be the number one issue in this actor and writer strike.
Well, I think it's fair to say that the controversy over AI is getting a lot of press, and indeed it is an issue. I think it might be the number two issue. We forget that, bottom line, we are also talking about residuals, which is to say money to the actors. I think most of our audience has a sense of what residuals are, and that is that actors are paid or are supposed to be paid each time that there's a repeat showing of a film or television show, right? Mm-hmm. Well, that was, if you think of it, that's really an old model because that had to do with network television or that repeated a movie. Mm. In a world of streaming, what is repeating, right? And in streaming, you've got movies that are just out there. And the actors, the Screen Actors Guild, is asking Netflix and Amazon and Disney, well, you need to tell us what those what that streaming data is so that we can actually calculate what residuals would be. And Netflix and Amazon and Disney aren't willing to share that information. Often, sometimes we hear about, you know, the most streamed episode or the most streamed movie, but it's not too often, and we don't get regular ratings, if you will. But I can't help but think that somebody somewhere has to have this data. I think it's a matter of what they don't want to share with each other. But if you're going to negotiate residuals, you have to include, okay, how many times does somebody see the movie Love Actually, right, on Netflix? Mm-hmm. How many times does someone see Game of Thrones on HBO? Otherwise, how can you calculate residuals? So they are pretty far apart, and this is a real sticking point. Now, let's talk about AI, right? We have heard stories of let's not talk about the stars. Let's talk about background actors, right?
Right.
And there's a heck of a lot more of them. We know for a fact that background actors have, when they show up for a film, for a job, there have been production companies, there have been directors, producers, et cetera, that have brought them into a small studio or a trailer and said, we're going to scan your image. And basically, what they're doing is scanning their image so that they can use it multiple times without paying them. And we know for a fact that that has happened. Only recently have these actors, and I think another term for them is what they call day actors, right? Folks who just, you know, they get paid for a day. And quite frankly, they don't get paid a heck of a lot of money. So imagine that, Gemma, if someone came to you and said, we're going to duplicate you and a robot is going to do your job from now on, and you won't get paid. And I think that if they communicate this story a little better to the public, more of us can relate to that. You know, we think about this big debate over AI, right? Well, imagine if someone scanned your image and even your voice, and then they never paid you, and they used it thousands of times, including long after you're dead. Wow.
Right. And George, I really appreciate this explanation because, you know, what would you say the general consensus is with the public about the strike? And I ask this because I've just anecdotally heard, you know, people say, like, well, they're actors. Please.
Right.
Like, they need this, you know, like they need more money. And it's like, well, look, there's a handful, truly, of actors who make, you know, gobs of money. Right. That is not the majority of Hollywood.
No, it's not. And quite frankly, most actors in Hollywood don't have benefits. They don't have health insurance. And there's a threshold. I think you have to take home $27,000. I think that's the Screen Actors Guild threshold to be eligible for benefits. Now, to a lot of folks, that doesn't seem like a lot of money. Well, if you're piecing together day jobs, good luck getting to $27,000 in a year. And so I think here's the disconnect for the Screen Actors Guild. I think you put that perfectly, Gemma, is that they have done a horrible job in communicating this because you've got to get the public on your side. Most of us have no sympathy for people who pull down seven figures to do one movie, right?
Right.
And then there are all of what is the industry calls them below-the-line workers. And that's the category that includes hairdressers and costume designers, camera operators, carpenters. Now, they're not on strike, but they're unemployed. They're not working because the writers and the actors are on strike and they have brought everything to a standstill. So imagine the overall impact to the economy. I think post-pandemic, a lot of us are exhausted and overworked and wish we could strike. And I think that that's part of the disconnect as well. But if you can say, hey, look at the average person on the picket line pulls down maybe $25,000 a year, I think more of us could have some sympathy for that. But I think they've got to get their act together in their messaging. The networks and the studios, they've got a hard line on this, right? Yeah. So imagine the networks. We're about to enter the fall. Now, normally they would panic. Normally they'd say, oh my gosh, it's the fall TV season with all the premieres and all the new shows. Well, the number one show on network television is NFL football, right? So we're going to be seeing a lot of sports in primetime, a lot more sports in primetime where nobody's on strike and the network is just going to continue to just count their money. Mm-hmm. So somebody's got to budge on this. I also want to share one thing here, and I thought this was really interesting. The trade publication deadline, this was attributed to an unnamed studio executive, but I want to read you this quote, and this is very recent. Quote, "The end game is to allow things to drag on until union members start losing their apartments and losing their houses." So that gives you an indication of, yeah, they are digging in their heels.
And another thing, and I'm sure, George, maybe you saw this, but there was also a quote from, and I found it on Deadline as well. Hollywood writers on average are paid $69,000 a year, okay, on average, right? $69,000. That is not an exorbitant salary.
And it's not every year.
It's not every year. Right. Bob Iger, the CEO of Disney, who called this strike very disturbing and the actors and writers demands very unrealistic. Okay. He makes $74,000 a day.
Yeah.
So I agree with you that I think that the union has not done a good job explaining to the broader public what these issues are. But when you think about the fact that they want to take your image, pay you one time, and then they don't want to give up their data about streaming, when we all know that is the future, right? We all know that they should be compensated. If that were any of us, we would want the same things as these writers and actors are asking for.
It could well be in our industry.
Absolutely.
And to writers, and by the way, they've been on strike for more than 100 days. I know a number of writers, and here's the typical scenario. Yeah, I sold a script last year. I didn't sell anything this year, and I may not sell anything next year. It's all on spec. There's no consistency. Rarely do they have benefits. Sometimes you'll make a bunch of money and then you will make none. And that is being a writer in Hollywood.
Before we take a break, George, how long do you think this could possibly go on?
I think it could possibly go well into the next year. I think it's a matter of the public is thinking, oh my gosh, I miss I miss my movies. I miss my TV shows. But keep in mind, these are only screen actors in the United States that are on strike. International productions are continuing. So the networks and the studios, you better believe they're going to gobble up international content, and they're going to push more sports at us. It could go very, very long. I think the studios are showing their hand here saying, yeah, you know, we'll wait until they start losing their houses. In other words, they'll wait till the Screen Actors Guild weakens its stance and maybe compromises more.
Okay, George, the phenom of Barbie. I understand you have an update for us.
Well, I think a lot of people have heard this is the billion-dollar movie, right?
Yeah.
It's already made. It hasn't really been out there that long. Only 29 films that have been directed by one director have cracked the $1 billion ceiling.
Wow.
28 men and one woman. So yeah. Greta Gerwig, director, writer of Barbie, is now in rarefied air. One other thing. In the history, in the history of Warner Brothers Studios. Now think of Warner Brothers Studios. This includes movies like The Exorcist, all of the Lord of the Rings movies, the Harry Potter franchise, all of those movies, the Batman movies, the Superman movies. No movie in the history of Warner Brothers' 100-year history has sold so many tickets so fast than Barbie.
Seriously?
Yeah. Yeah. On top of that, it's a critical success. Greta Gerwig is getting great reviews.
Oh.
And it's a fair bet she'll be Oscar-bound again. She's already a three-time Academy Award nominee. She did Lady Bird and Little Women, which we adore. Mm-hmm. So a critical success and a huge box office success. Wow. So have you seen it?
So, George, I just saw it this last week.
Mm-hmm.
And I have so many thoughts about it because I was truly overwhelmed by my reaction to it, by truly, I think how good it is. And here a little bit about myself. I loved Barbies. I loved Barbies. And then there was Ken. I mean, I had the Barbie dream house, the Barbie dream pool, the Barbie car. Barbie could do anything. Like, I loved Barbies. And seeing this movie for me was, first, I think it's funny, but it's so deep. And I think it speaks so much to our culture in so many ways. But as I'm watching it, George, first off, there are moments where I'm laughing. There's moments where I'm crying. And right. In the midst of it, I'm like, this is Barbie.
Yeah.
How did they do this? It's Barbie.
So provocative. You are not alone by any means. So I'm going through social media the other day, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm seeing photos of all these people dressed up as pink, right, outside the flicks.
Oh, yeah.
And so I reached out to one of those people. Let's take a listen.
Oh, that was me. That was him. And as I said to him that night, he's no just Ken.
Okay. And so you went, I'm hoping you went to see Barbie.
We did go to see Barbie, and I have to confess that was my third time seeing Barbie.
What?
Yeah. So George, this is my third time. That was my third time seeing Barbie.
Okay.
And I've never actually seen a movie multiple times in a theater, and I've actually never seen a movie multiple times on purpose, except for Love Actually, which I saw at the Flicks when it opened. It was back in 2003 or whatever, and then I got a VCR tape and I watched it every year. And probably 6 or 7 years into this, my husband figured out I was always watching this movie. So now we watch it together every year. And now our kids watch it with us too. But yes, Barbie is the only other movie and the only movie I've gone to the theater multiple times to see.
And yeah, that's the mayor. Mayor Lauren McClain, clad in pink with her husband, Scott. He's also full in pink, taking their photos. And by the way, at the Flicks, they're really embracing this. Gemma, this is so I just sent you an email.
Okay.
I need you to open up the email. And there's a few images there. Okay.
Okay.
Let me know if you've opened those.
I have.
Okay. So one of those photos is of two beverages. So the Flicks is selling the Barbie and the Ken.
No, they are not.
The Barbie is a rosé plus sparkling water, some strawberry flavoring. It's served with a red vine straw. The Ken is non-alcoholic. It's Italian soda with a special cream strawberry coconut flavored, also with a red vine straw. Okay, so there's another image there, and that is a dessert bar. They are selling the Barbie Blondie. It's a strawberry lemonade blondie dessert bar, and they bake them special only for weekend shows of Barbie. And then they have they've introduced the Malibu chicken sandwich to their menu, of course, in
with the pineapple on it.
With the pineapple, right? Malibu Barbie, right? I thought that, and then they're selling special Barbenheimer. If you would insist on seeing both of them together, you can save a couple of bucks, et cetera. But yeah, it's all about Barbie. Right?
George, I mean, I have to tell you, like, this movie is there's hardly any words to describe it. I feel like the mayor. I mean, I've already told my husband, I'm like, we need to go see this together. Like, this movie is so profound. I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, well, is it because we didn't expect much from Barbie? Like, I don't, but it goes beyond Barbie. And I was blown away by it, truly.
Huge hit. And I think, again, on paper, who would have thought, oh my gosh, Barbie? Because, you know, they constantly take toys or old cartoons. And it's like, oh my gosh, here's another Lego movie. But Greta Gerwig, that's the difference. Greta Gerwig. Turned that story inside out.
I think it really shows her genius.
Yeah.
Especially knowing that she was a writer on this. Truly her genius.
So, I mean, you could probably certainly count her. I think, a Best Picture nominee, Best Director, Best Screenplay, and Margot Robbie probably Best Actress and Ryan Gosling Best Supporting Actor, don't you think?
I think so, and I would love to see America Ferrera, frankly.
Right, and then that song, I'm Ken, that Ryan Gosling sings?
Yes.
Ryan Gosling has to sing that song at the Oscars. You will get people to actually watch the show if he sings that song at the Oscars.
100%. Okay, well, we cannot spend this entire time talking about Barbie, even though I could, because there's a new miniseries that kicks off this week, and this has been really highly anticipated.
It is. It's called Painkiller. It's on Netflix, and this is a new dramatic series that tells the story of the rise of Purdue Pharma through its drug OxyContin, and then the addiction crisis that followed. And Matthew Broderick plays one of the folks, you know, he plays Richard Sackler as he hatches the plan to create and then market this drug.
All of human behavior is essentially comprised of two things, running away from pain and toward pleasure. If we become the gatekeepers for everyone who wants to get away from pain, then we have changed the world.
Chilling. Absolutely chilling.
Wow.
What's interesting is that each episode of Painkiller begins with a disclaimer, as a lot of these types of shows, right? You know, at first you always read something or you hear a voice that says, well, this is based on true events. But the disclaimer, the first disclaimer in this, it's a person, it's a relative of someone who lost their loved one to the opioid epidemic. So let's listen.
What wasn't fictionalized is that my son, at the age of 15, was prescribed OxyContin. And at the age of 32, he died all alone in the freezing cold in a gas station parking lot. And we miss it.
Oh.
Yeah. It is.
George.
It's Painkiller. It drops on Netflix beginning today. And there will be, I think, 6 episodes. And of course, the Sackler family, they have cut a deal, as we know, on the side where they paid, I forget how many billions, just so they would not be sued again. But for goodness sakes, the Sackler family. Painkiller, don't miss it. It's on Netflix.
Yeah, definitely necessary viewing.
Yep.
You know. Okay, so after that, because that I think would be quite heavy to watch, you have a little something fun for us that we might be able to watch at home this weekend?
Only Murders in the Building. is back.
I know.
Season 3, Mabel, Charles, and Oliver, right? Selena Gomez and Martin Short and Steve Martin. They're investigating this sudden collapse of Paul Rudd's character. Paul Rudd is in this new season, along with Meryl Streep, by the way.
Right.
But Martin Short and Steve Martin, you got to love them. Let's listen.
Charles, are you home?
I'm in desperate need of your help. I have these scarves. Do you think they're too much for a funeral? Or do you have something I can borrow from your incredibly bland wardrobe?
Huh?
I didn't realize you were going to the funeral.
Why would I not go to the funeral?
Well, I mean, it's more of a fancy who's who kind of thing. And you know, you and Ben
had a complicated but ultimately copacetic working relationship.
I hope you gave the police a better performance than whatever that was.
I gave them an honest statement, not to mention a complete list of alibi witnesses and a doctor's note saying I'm too weak to kill.
Ow. Jesus. I do not have time to plumb the depths of your conscience. Donna and Cliff are dodging my calls. I have to convince them not to kill my show.
Oh, so now you're the victim here, not the man in the box.
All I need is 5 minutes. Give me 5 minutes in a room, and I can convince anyone of anything.
That is not true.
I convinced you to get Paramount Plus.
No, I wanted that.
Did you?
Hulu taking a shot across the bow at Paramount Plus. I love it. Only Murders goodness. In the Building, Season 3. It has now begun on Hulu. It's head and shoulders above everything else on Hulu, by the way. It is so, so very good. So please keep making this series. How many more series? Goodness knows. There's always a mystery to be solved. There's always somewhere. Mm-hmm. But after a while, that building's going to be filled with bodies. The new season, I've seen the first three episodes. They are delightful.
So I'm halfway through the first episode because I had to stop and make dinner for my kids last night. You know,
you have to pause for the laugh.
I know. This parenting thing gets in the way of my viewing habits. What I love so much though too, George, is Selena Gomez and her relationship with Martin Short and Steve Martin,
oh my
because
gosh.
they make these references
right.
and she's like, don't just stop.
Just stop. I mean,
and I'm because they'll make references, you know, to their generation.
Right. The
60s, and then they try to explain it to her. Right. And it is, oh my goodness. But I am so thrilled that this is back. I adored the first two seasons of this.
And it is, it does cross generations, right? I mean, Selena Gomez is fabulous. She's run out of ways to do eye rolls, but I can't get enough of her. And there is a scene, I think it's in the third episode, where it's an homage to the movie All That Jazz. You know, the Bob Fosse movie?
Yeah.
Where she and Steve Martin are dressed like Fosse dancers, and they're doing Fosse moves. But unless you're of, well, quite frankly, our generation, you're not going to get it. It just looks funny, but it's just the best. It's so great.
It is so good. Definitely, folks, see it if you have not.
Yep.
But George, as always, so lovely to have you in, and really just appreciate all of your recommendations.
Thanks, Gemma. I love being here with you.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudet. We'll see you tomorrow.
Want to learn how to be a master of business without going back to school? Listen to the Planet Money MBA. No suits, no PowerPoints, just the secrets of business school delivered straight to your ears. Every Wednesday till Labor Day on Planet Money from NPR.